Hi, this is Gavin from FE News. I'm here at EPA Live talking to some of the interesting speakers on the stage. It's people in the audience to get the latest developments in endpoint assessment. So this is Gavin from FE News. I'm here with Richard Marsh. How are you, Richard?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Gavin. Yourself?
Very good. So, Richard, can we chat about the what you see the biggest challenges to be for employers and providers when they're thinking about standards and endpoint assessment? What are the practical things that you could give us as some pearls of wisdom, some advice?
I'm not so sure about pearls of wisdom, but we're here at this conference today running some workshops looking at, as you say, the practical implementations and challenges as you move from frameworks to standards, and in particular around the endpoint assessment. And with just 6 months to go before the end of frameworks in the summer of 2020, I think if people haven't already looked at this or thought about it, it's really critical that we start to do so now. So in terms of our experience, we've been 2.5 years now on new standards. So we've learnt a lot, got some things right, got some things wrong, and we're just sharing our experience with others. I think it's interesting to think about employers and providers, and the challenges are similar, but the perspective and the context is slightly different, because see, one is a provider and one is a customer, I guess, in most senses. But there are some common areas for both. So in terms of talking through what we've been looking at with other providers, we've been talking through all of the areas that you need to think about, from where do you get your materials from if we're no longer relying on awarding bodies to provide workbooks and materials as we did under the MVQ based frameworks. Have you got the intellectual capacity and property required for putting on a standard? And that's what a key thing that an employer is going to be asking, you know, what are your credentials in terms of running a standard? And then in terms of delivery, well, we've all been used to an assessor based model in apprenticeships, but now there's a lot more input required from training providers. So do you need tutors? Do you need teachers? So who's going to deliver all that material that you've had to produce to put on the standards? Do you still need assessors? Do you still need the internal and external verifiers that you've had in the old traditional apprenticeship model? For ourselves, we've settled on a combination model of assessors that we call coaches, and then teachers that we call tutors. So we have a team that are charged with inputting the technical materials and the knowledge element of the standards, and then other teams who coach and support the learners through the more practical elements like the skills and the behaviours. And they work very closely together to make sure that a learner is covered 360. But it is a big difference from the assessor-only model that a lot of us are used to. And so it takes quite a lot of thought and planning to work through as a training provider.
One thing I've been sort of asking a few people today is the dual professionalism approach. So what have you learned, or what have you sort of could you recommend to be able to help that delivery model to be able to maintain their dual professionalism, to keep their competency in industry, but also be an expert in supporting learners through their educational journey, you know?
Yeah, and that's a real challenge, I think, in many industries. You know, it's almost prohibitive cost-wise to have people who are fully qualified. So traditionally, we've looked for people at the start of their career, or people who want a lifestyle change to be teaching rather than practitioners, or people at the end of their careers. So, you know, for ourselves in the team, we look at having a mix across that. And then your approach to continuing professional development and staying relevant is varied depending on the stage somebody's at their career, I think. You know, people towards the end of the career tend to have plenty of workplace experience that they can pass on, and might need more support with their teaching and mentoring skills. People at the start of the career could be the other way around. So we're looking for opportunities for them to go back into industry and secondment. Or many employers have been really receptive to our coaches spending time in their business, getting to know how their business works in order to be able to better coach and train their staff, and seeing that as part of their job. And us then having, as training providers, explicitly giving them the time to do that as part of their job is really, really important.
So it's about sort of developing that partnership approach, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a bit like the standards themselves. Often the breadth of experience you need for an apprenticeship standard is wider than that which you need for your particular job role, and so we have to support employers to give people access to that breadth of experience to cover all of the competencies. It's exactly the same with assessors, coaches and tutors. You know, they need to have a wider industry knowledge than just their subject materials. Otherwise, they sometimes fail to give a full learning experience. So we have to be working with them and with our employers to continue to look for opportunities for them to get back into industry and get that breadth of experience.
And we've sort of covered partnership working. Yeah. Another massive thing for standards and endpoint assessment is all around quality.
Yeah, sure.
And what sort of advice could you sort of share with people around what you've found on your journey? Obviously, we're still all developing our processes all the time, but is there anything which people need to be thinking of when they're looking at standards and endpoint assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two key things that we're picking up on today, and that experience seems to be common with other providers too. Firstly, it's if you thought that the move from frameworks to standards meant that you no longer needed to do your own internal or external verification, then that notion has been completely blown out. Even though you as a provider are not making official judgments on somebody's competence and, you know, sort of achievements, that's all been done externally through the EPA, you've absolutely got to be monitoring progress, and you've absolutely got to be quality assuring things like portfolios of evidence before they go to the EPA, because quite rightly, the individual apprentice and their employer will want to know what you've been doing as a provider if somebody goes through your programme and then is found to be wanting an endpoint assessment. So, you know, we're still doing the internal verification of learners' work before it's submitted to EPA. And I think that's really, really important. The second aspect around quality in a more strategic, you know, broader sense has been just how long it takes to get from gateway to EPA. So naively, we thought that the typical journey would be 90% training and then 10% assessment at the end. It's actually turned out to be more like 70-30, with some really meaty projects that have to be done post-gateway, often taking months for the individual to complete. And so the employer and the individual need to be prepared for that and for the amount of time and effort that actually the gateway into EPA phase takes. So we've had to extend that period, and that's something that's worth, you know, broaching right at the start of the programme.
So what are some of the other things that employers and providers need to be considering with standards and endpoint assessment?
Yeah, okay, so one of the things that's really emerged as a trend and something to be really aware of is the relationship between the apprenticeship and qualifications. In some industries, there are really well-recognised qualifications that apprentices really need, otherwise they'll never be considered to be, you know, legitimate in their sector or their industry. And they're not always contained within the apprenticeship standard. So you've got to understand that background and think about, is it a mandatory qualification that's listed in the standard and therefore has to be covered pre-gateway? Or is it a non-mandatory qualification that you still think is really important because it gives the apprentice credibility within the industry? If it's non-mandatory, well, that can't be paid for using apprenticeship funding, for example. So who pays for that? When is it paid for? Are all things that you need to work out with your employers and your contracts before you start? Because otherwise you can run into problems with people assuming that everything is covered in the apprenticeship funding and standard, and it's not always the case. But you want to make sure the individual is set up for success in their career. So you want them to get the best qualification as well as the apprenticeship. So all of that takes a lot of thought and a lot of planning, and we're just encouraging people to address those things before learning starts so you're not caught out further down the line.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Why not click subscribe so you can be informed when the latest next individual podcast or podcast mini series from FE News are going to be released.